BBC.
BBC.
You're with the BBC. Hello, I'm Harriet Gilbert. Welcome to The Strand. Today, the Egyptian author of internationally best-selling novel The Akubian Building on his new story collection, Twilight Vampires in Italy and Baby Aliens and Other Nightmares. You may well ask, stay tuned to find out. But we start with a more mundane kind of horror, that of day-to-day life in Egypt as depicted in the short stories of Alaa Alaswani. In his fictional world, women are variously, sometimes brutally mistreated by their menfolk, and men find their careers frustrated by institutionalised corruption. It's no wonder that for a decade, Alaa Alaswani's stories were rejected by Egypt's state-run publishing house. But then, in 2002, the situation did a somersault. A small independent house dared bring out a novel he'd written called The Akubian Building, and within 4 weeks, every copy had sold. The book went on to become the Arab world's number one bestseller for 5 years running, to be translated into 27 languages and to sell over 1 million copies around the globe. And now a collection of Alaa Alaswani's short fictions has been translated into English under the title Friendly Fire. And when he came to the Strand studio, he started by describing the time when the earliest stories were written, when he was earning his living as a dentist, but slipping out at night to visit the darker side of Cairo in search of characters for his fiction. The two activities didn't always mix.
During the day, I was a very, very respectful dentist, even boring dentist. And during the night, I had this other life. And sometimes some of my patients saw me.
But hanging around rather dubious bars.
Yeah. There was some patient who saw me, and it was 4 a.m., and there was people were really drunk, and they were fighting, and I tried to interfere. And he opened the window saying that if you don't shut up, I'm going to call the police. And then he saw me. I disappeared. And then after 2 days, he came, and he was supposed to make some dental treatment. And from the very beginning, he kept looking at me in a very strange way. And he said, "Doctor, have you been at 4 a.m. downtown 2 days ago?" I said, "4 a.m.? No. No, I must go to bed very early, you see, because I begin my work very early." And then he said, he felt very comfortable. He said, "Yes." I said that somebody was really having a similar face, because there is no way you could have been you.
How do you manage now that you're so well known? I mean, presumably if you go anywhere, there are people saying, "Oh, hi, I know who you are."
Yes. Well, I cannot complain, because some writers complain. I will never complain from that. But I insist to do whatever I want. I insist all the time to go to the places I want to go, to explore life over there, because this is my job.
The character in the first story in this collection, the narrator, Issam Abdel Atti, he's very bitter, he's very guarded against the world, he doesn't know how to communicate with people. Throughout the story, he is being more and more pressured by maybe things at home, because his father is... His father's a failure and he rather despises him, but also his father dies when he's still a student. And as he begins to crack up under all these strains, I wondered whether you saw it as something very particular to him, this one person with his psychology, his childhood, his family, or whether in some way it was more generally because he was a man trying to make a life for himself in present-day Egypt.
Both reasons, because I believe that when you have a very, very sensitive person and very intelligent with very poor ability of communication, then you will be very susceptible to be in trouble. Because I think the human communication is a kind of protection. Also, I think that the difference between what happens in Egypt and what should happen is very big. And usually when we are young, we are a bit naive and too optimistic, and we think we are going to change this world positively. And then with age, we discover that our capability to change the world is not very big. But some people get shocked, like Issam, because he's idealistic and he's intelligent. He's very intelligent.
Is there something, then, are you saying, about Egyptian society and the way it's organized that makes it harder to change the world, that makes it more frustrating to
be... Of course. You see, we did study in medicine the very important lesson, the disease and symptoms. Never try to cure the symptoms without curing the disease. We have dictatorship. A dictatorship is a disease. And you have many, many symptoms and complications like injustice, poverty, corruption. So he is severely shocked by what is happening in Egypt. But he's not able to see the difference between what is happening in Egypt and Egypt itself. So he began the novel with a terrible insults. Terrible insults.
There's about two pages of ranting
about
the
Egyptians and weakness. And I believe that this is fairy. When I wrote that, it is very, very close to a theater, you see, because I could even hear his voice while he was talking. I was able at one moment to be him.
I challenge anyone to cite me a single Egyptian virtue. Cowardice and hypocrisy, underhandedness and cunning, laziness and spite. These are our characteristics as Egyptians. And because we know the truth about ourselves, we cover it over with a lot of shouting and lies, empty, ringing slogans that we repeat day in, day out about our great Egyptian people. And the sad thing is, we've repeated these lies so often, we've ended up believing them.
That opening passage from the story from the Issam Abdel Atti papers was probably one of the reasons why this story just couldn't get published for years and years. I mean, it was nobody would publish it, would they?
It was a very silly situation. The responsible of the government publication was not able to see the difference between the character and the author. So he thought that what Issam is saying is my own opinion. I tried to explain to him that if I have a character as a thief, it does not mean that I am a thief. But it was too complicated for him to understand.
I haven't read your short fiction before this, and I was very surprised and delighted by how playful, in a way, you are with the stories. I mean, for instance, you have one story which is constructed purely as a two-paragraph question, or you have another which is... a lecture that's being given, and it's primarily being given to the air conditioning attendant in the lecture hall. Is there something about the short story as distinct from the novel that allows you to kind of play around with how you're going to tell the story more?
The short story falls on my head like an apple. The short story is very, very close to a poem. It's a happy present, you see. It comes or it doesn't come.
A happy present. But in terms of their content, most of them are pretty grim and dark, aren't they? Is this your view of human life?
Not at all, but I have been always motivated by how people suffer and how people are not happy and how they are treated with injustice. That's why you find this in my writings.
I'm interested in the title of the collection, Friendly Fire, which... the military use when some of their men have managed to shoot their own people down rather than shooting the enemy. It's not the title of one of the stories in the collection, so I assume that Friendly Fire is a kind of summing up for you of the general themes of the collection. What do you mean by it?
Well, the first time I heard this term was during the Second Gulf War, when the American soldiers were killed. Some statements used to say that they were killed by friendly fire. And I found this very interesting. I said, what does it mean, friendly fire? And how a fire could be friendly if it kills? And when I finished, I made this collection, I found that the title would really refer some common element in all the text. I mean, many people in this book have been damaged from the people who are very close to them.
I wondered if it might have other meanings besides the one that you've just given, one of them being perhaps that Egypt is firing on its own people without intending to.
Exactly, I agree. And even some of the greatest critics of the Arab world said the same thing. So it could have many meanings.
And what about the one that you are firing on your country with the best and kindest intentions.
Well, I think this is what literature is all about. I'm not writing literature to say that everything is correct and everything is beautiful, because if everything is correct and everything is beautiful, I don't see any point to write.
Alaswani, whose new collection of stories translated into English by Humphrey Davis is called Friendly Fire. I'm Harriet Gilbert and you're listening to the BBC's global arts and entertainment programme, The Strand.